Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song. Something you never seen before. So gather around, squeeze it tight, 'cause you're bound to hear a little truth tonight. 'Cause the love around here is bound to make you fall. Head over heels for heaven above.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching through the Gospel of John, where we've been following the conversation that Jesus was having with the Samaritan woman by the well. And we'll continue with more on dealing with the sin in our lives as we pick up in John chapter 4, verse 19, as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
You see, Jesus Christ came into the world and he came with the gift of God. He comes offering living water to every single person who's thirsty. But the hindrance to that living water is sin. And there's not that possibility of experiencing that water that he offers. While sin is there, sin has to be dealt with. And that's what Jesus is doing here. He's going to deal with the sin in this woman's life so he can bring the blessing that he wants to bring to her. That's the obstacle. And that's the obstacle for people today. And think about it. Most of us, you know, you get to a point in life where you sort of figure it out that if you drink this water, you'll thirst again. It just seems to happen over and over again. And then perhaps you hear about the possibility of living water, this offer that Jesus Christ is making. But then you find out also that there are things that are going to have to change in your life. And the amazing thing to me is that some people at that point, they turn away from it. They say, oh, well, you know, if that's the case or if that's the cost, I'm not interested. I want to hold on to this thing. And it's so bizarre that people would do that. They're miserable. They're discontent. They're frustrated. Jesus says this is the solution to all that. But they're saying, oh no, I can't because I've got this thing here, this sin. And I am amazed. I know numbers of people, myself personally, family members, people I love. Their lives are miserable. By their own admission, their lives are miserable. And in moments of truth, they'll talk about how miserable they are. And we tell them over and over again, Jesus is the answer. Jesus has living water that he'll give you. Oh, but no, I can't because I've got... And they've got some absurd, ridiculous thing that they're holding on to that's keeping them back. And here's the sad thing. It will keep you back. Because the living water can only flow when the obstacle of sin is dealt with and removed. And so Jesus puts the finger on the issue in this woman's life. The problem is sin. The remedy is, I want you to notice this, the remedy is not religion. But notice how the woman sort of retreats into religion. She's convicted. I think deep in her soul, she's all of a sudden there's that sting of conviction. And she says, she acknowledges, sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. But then what does she do immediately? She says, our fathers worshiped on this mountain. You Jews say that in Jerusalem is the place where one ought to worship. So immediately she sort of retreats into religion. And you can almost see in this that she's sort of making an excuse the excuse that you hear a lot of people make today, oh, well, there, you know, there's so many religions and everything's so confusing, and this group is arguing with that group, and, you know, who knows what's true? Who knows what's right? And she more or less does that here. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain. You Jews say in Jerusalem is the place that you ought to worship. So she sort of throws up this religious smokescreen, maybe to try to divert the conversation in a different direction. But Jesus doesn't let it go in a different direction. He says, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship the Father." And then he tells her very straightforwardly, "You worship what you do not know. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour is coming, and now is, it has arrived, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth." You see, Jesus said, this is the answer. The answer is not religion. I can't tell you how many people I've met, and you have opportunities maybe to share a little bit with them, and a lot of times they will retreat into religion, and in some cases it will even sort of lead them to make a fresh commitment to their religious affiliation. I've seen that happen quite a few times with people. And because of a conversation or something, okay, they're going to go back to their church, or they're going to go back to their synagogue, or they're going to go back to their mosque, or whatever the case might be. That's not the solution. You see, the issue is a relationship with God. It's not about religion. And that's what Jesus is saying. The Samaritans were arguing that Mount Gerizim, that's the place. The Jews were insisting, no, Jerusalem is the place. They were right at that time. But Jesus tells them, actually, the time has arrived when it's not going to be in either place or any place. It's not about a specific geographical location. It's not about a shrine. It's not about a temple. It's not about a building made with hands. It's about worshiping God in the Spirit. Because God is Spirit. And those that worship Him, Jesus said, they must worship Him in spirit and in truth. Now, what did He mean by in spirit and in truth? I think what He's talking about is the fact that we can only worship God in the Spirit. We have to worship Him in that realm of the Spirit. But in order to worship in the realm of the Spirit, our spirits have to be revived. Our spirits have to be brought back to life. You see, this is the problem with man. He was created spirit, soul, and body. But sin brought death to the spiritual aspect of man. So in order for a man to truly worship God, to truly know God and experience God, he has to have his spirit resurrected. And that's what Jesus was talking about when he said to Nicodemus, you must be born again. He was talking about the necessity of a spiritual birth, that dead spirit needs to be revived, needs to be brought back to life. And so those who worship God must worship Him in spirit, because God is spirit. They must worship Him in truth. Now, here's something that people, and especially in our current generation, have a real difficult time with, but this is a reality. God is the one who lays down the means and the method by which He will be worshipped. It's not up to man. Now, for some strange reason, people these days think that they ought to make the rules in regard to God. For some strange reason, I guess it's just because of the incredible self-centeredness of people these days, are offended by the fact that God would try to lay down some rules about how He's going to be worshipped or approached. That's utterly absurd when you think about it. But that's the reality. And it's inflexible. God doesn't bend in this area whatsoever. And Jesus made that clear right here to the Samaritan woman. They were worshiping at Mount Gerizim. Jesus said, you're wrong. Oh boy, today to tell somebody they're wrong, oh, that is the height of arrogance and the unpardonable sin. To tell somebody they're wrong about anything practically these days. but especially to have the audacity to tell somebody that their religion is wrong. Jesus said, your religion is wrong. You worship what you do not know. And of course, he then went on to say, we know what we worship. And he made it clear, salvation is of the Jews. What did he mean by that? The Messiah, the messianic promises were given to Israel, and the Savior of the world would arise from the Jewish nation. That's exactly what happened. And that's what he was describing at this point. But I want you to notice something that he says about God. Having said that we must worship in spirit and in truth, meaning according to God's standard, according to what God has declared about how he will be approached. But he says an interesting thing. He says that God is spirit and that he is seeking worshipers. But I find it fascinating that Jesus doesn't speak of God only as God, which is more of a title. But notice with this Samaritan woman, he uses the term Father. That's pretty astounding. Because at this stage in history, God was acknowledged to be the father of the nation of Israel. But no Jew would ever take it upon themselves to refer to God as their father in a personal sense. Jesus was very unique in that. He spoke of my father. And of course, he told his followers that he was their father as well. But here he's talking to a Samaritan. He's talking to this woman whom the religious community would deem just completely outside of the pale of God's interest. And Jesus uses this term with her. He says, the Father. But he says, the Father is seeking worshipers. Now, here's the question. Why is God seeking worshipers? For the Father is seeking such to worship him. Think about that for a moment. God is seeking worshipers. He's seeking people to worship him. Why would he seek after that? Is God lonely? And so he needs, in order to fulfill that void in his being, he needs worshipers. Is God incomplete in some way? Is God insecure? Some people have accused God of being insecure. Kind of God is this, he needs people to worship him. Is he on a big ego trip or something? People say things like that. No, God's not lonely. He's not incomplete. And he's certainly not insecure. So why then is God seeking worshipers? God is seeking worshipers because God is love. And love by its very nature must share. You see, man was created to worship. That is why we exist. And even though the majority of people reject God, the true God, the God of the Bible, you can see in man in general, you see the bent toward worship. We worship all different kinds of things. We worship ideologies. We worship things, material things. We worship other people. We have heroes. We have celebrities. We have idols. This is unique with man. You don't find this in any other area of biological life. There's no worship going on in the animal kingdom. There's no worship going on in that other realm of life. But in the realm of man, you see, man is by nature a worshiper. Man must worship something. But here's the problem. Man becomes like whatever it is he worships. And because he's bent toward worship, and generally speaking, worships the wrong thing, through his worship, he becomes corrupted. And God, knowing that man was created to worship and man was created for worship, he goes in pursuit of man so that man can do the right thing. He can do the very thing that he was created to do and thus have fulfillment in life. So God's seeking of worshipers is not for his benefit. It's not because he's lonely or incomplete or insecure. God seeks worshipers for the benefit of the worshiper. He comes after us because he knows this is what we were created for. We don't realize it. We're not smart enough. We're stupid. And we go in the wrong direction and we worship all the wrong things and we end up living lives of misery and we ultimately destroy ourselves. But God is love and he's not going to allow that totally or completely. And so he seeks for worshipers. It is not, as is so often thought, man seeking God, but rather God seeks out man. That right there is a distinction between biblical Christian revelation and every other religion on the planet. I don't care what you call it. That is a distinction right there. In every other religion in the world, you have man seeking God, man on a quest for God, man trying to find out God, who he is, what he's like, how he's worshiped and pleased. But in the biblical revelation, you have God seeking man. It is not the thirsty seeking water, but water seeking the thirsty. It is not the hungry seeking bread, but bread seeking the hungry. It is not the sad seeking joy, but joy seeking the sad. It is not emptiness seeking fulfillment, but rather fullness seeking emptiness. Isn't that amazing? You see, it's God. He's the seeker. And Jesus is exemplifying that very thing in this story because he needed to go through Samaria. He didn't actually need to go through it. He could have gone a different way into Galilee. But he needed to go there. Why? Because here was this woman. And she had been married 5 times, and those marriages had failed. And now she was living with this man, and she was cynical, and she was sarcastic, and she was empty, and she was weary. And Jesus knew that she would be at that well at that time of the day. And he was embodying the truth that he was teaching to her, that the Father is seeking worshipers. In closing, the thing that I want to highlight is Christ's gracious willingness to reveal himself to sinners. Jesus concludes his conversation with this woman by telling her openly and unreservedly that he is the Messiah. He did not tell that to many people. And maybe you remember on several occasions in the gospel when it's suggested by others that he is the Messiah, he tones that down. But to this woman, this Samaritan woman, he tells her straight out. She says, I know the Messiah is going to come. He's going to tell us everything. He said, I who speak to you, I am. You know, that's literally what he said. If you look in your Bible here at the 26th verse, you'll notice that he is in italics, which means it was inserted by the translators to help us just in reading it. But Jesus did not say, I am he. He actually literally said, I who speak to you, I am. I am. That's the name of God. That's how God revealed himself to Israel. I am. I am what? That's the question. I am whatever you need. I'm that living water to quench your thirst. I'm that bread that came down from heaven so you'll never hunger. I'm that light so you will not have to walk in darkness. I am that shepherd to guide you through life. I am the resurrection and the life. All of those things are implied in that claim of Jesus, I am. Nowhere in all the Gospels do we find the Lord making such a full avowal of his nature and office as he does here. And let it be forever remembered that it was not made to learn scribes or moral Pharisees, but to one who up until that day, that hour, that moment, had been an ignorant, thoughtless, immoral person. Isn't that amazing? That's who Jesus revealed his true identity to. To this woman, who up until just a few moments ago was completely ignorant and apparently thoughtless and totally immoral, and Jesus is revealing himself to her. He's disclosing to her something that he withheld from others. He said, I who speak to you, I am. I am the Messiah. And you know, here's the thing. That same Jesus Christ is living this moment. He resurrected from the dead 2,000 years ago. And what he said to that woman there, then, he's saying to anybody who will listen to him today, he's saying, if you knew the gift of God and who it was that was speaking to you, you would ask him and he would give you living water. That offer is being extended today to anyone who's thirsty, to anyone who's ready to receive it. And in that, Jesus Christ is offering to us a relationship with God, where God comes into our lives. And you know, it's not, we say this a lot, but it's not religion. Religion is stuffy, it's stale, it's stagnant, it's burdensome, it's boring. That's what religion is. We're talking about a relationship. We're talking about life. You know, let's say you go on vacation and you're going to go to your favorite area where there's a lake. And when you arrive, you find that the level of the lake is really, really low because there hasn't been any rain. And not only is the level of the lake low, but because it's so low, it's become stagnant. And there you are, you pull up and you look at the lake and it's all infested with mosquitoes and all of this kind of stuff. And it's just, there it is, stagnant. You know, what are you going to do? Oh, don't worry about it. Let's just jump in anyway. It'll be okay. No, you're going to go, oh, this, what is this? Let's get out of here. And somebody says, hey, I know where there's a river. I know where there's this great stream. We can get the inner tubes. We can float down that stream. Oh, it's going to be great. You're going to opt for that in a heartbeat. That's what we're talking about here. Religion is a stagnant pool infested with all kinds of foul things. Jesus Christ is offering life. It's a river flowing, a torrent gushing. It's fresh, beautiful, pure water. It's life. And wherever it goes, over and over again, the Lord, in his word, he reveals himself and illustrates himself through this idea of flowing water. He says through the prophet Jeremiah, he says, Israel has committed a great sin. They've forsaken me, the fountain of living water, and they've hewn out for themselves cisterns, broken cisterns that can't hold any water. They've traded the flowing water for the stagnant pond. And Jesus, that's what he's offering to people. Not religion. He's offering a relationship, a dynamic relationship. Not something tame and stagnant, but something vibrant and flowing, something that is there consistently rising up within to keep that freshness and that lusciousness in your own life, but flowing out from your life to touch the lives of others as well. And who's he offering that to? He's offering it to any ignorant, thoughtless, immoral person around that'll take it. He's no respecter of persons. He offers it to all people without exception.
As Pastor Brian just mentioned in his closing words today, Jesus is not offering us religion, but rather he's offering each of us a relationship with the one true living God. And we'll continue with more of our study through the Gospel of John in our next lesson. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of today's message or would like to order a copy for a friend or a loved one, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled Jesus and the Samaritan Woman. Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number BT3228. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian or subscribe to our podcasts and vodcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
Turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.